ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यास ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टाप्रयेषव भद्रेषु नित्यं भगवत सेवया भागवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 1, The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone, verses 33 and 34. We have verse 34 written, so we can chant this together. Shri Yudhishthira Uvacha. Kidrishakasya Vashapa Kidrishakasya Vashapo Haridasa Vimarshana Haridasa Vimarshana Ashradheya Ivabhati Ashradheya Ivabhati Harer Ekantinam Bhava Harer Ekantinam Bhava
Shri Vishnu Vachan, Shri Vishnu Vachan, Hari Dasa Vimarsana,
Sri Yudhisthira Uvacha. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, Kidrisha, what kind of, Kasya, whose, Va, or, Shapa, curse, Haridasa, the servant of Hari, Abhimarsana, overcoming, Ashradheya, incredible, Iva, as if, Abhati, appears, Hare, of Hari, Ekantinam, of those exclusively devoted, as exalted attendants, Bhava, birth. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Translation, Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, what kind of great curse could affect even liberated Vishnu Bhaktas, and what sort of person could curse even the Lord's associates? For unflinching devotees of the Lord to fall again to this material world is impossible. I cannot believe this. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 8:16, the Lord clearly states, Mam upetya tukonteya punarjanma na vidyate. One who is purified of material contamination and returns home back to Godhead does not return to this material world. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, was surprised that a pure devotee could return to this material world. This is certainly a very important question. So ends Prabhupada's purport to this verse. I will now read verse 33 and its short purport. Matri shvasreyo vashchayo dantavakrascha pandava parshada pravarao vishnur vipra shabat padachutao. Narada Muni continued, O best of the Pandavas, your two cousins, Shishupala and Dantavakra, the sons of your maternal aunt, were formerly associates of Lord Vishnu. But because they were cursed by Brahmanas, they fell from Vaikuntha to this material world. Purport. Shishupala and Dantavakra were not ordinary demons, but were formerly personal associates of Lord Vishnu. They apparently fell to this material world they apparently fell to this material world, but actually they came to assist the Supreme Personality of Godhead by nourishing his pastimes within this world. And so ends Prabhupada's purport to this verse. And here I sit with great trepidation to discuss these topics, especially in the presence of so many senior devotees, so I beg your blessings that we may say something helpful, meaningful, encouraging, and possibly even enlivening. But this will be with your help. We may want to have some discussion on this. Before we go into this, I want to back up a bit because I find this so important as a major theme of the entire Bhagavatam. In verse 31, Narada Muni has explained to Yudhishthira, and I read, "The gopis, by their lusty desires, Kamsa, by his fear, Shishupala and other kings, by envy, the Yadus, by their familial relationship with Krishna, you Pandavas, by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have obtained the mercy of Krishna." I'm reminded of another verse in the Bhagavatam that comes in chapter 43. Krishna and Balarama are entering the ranga, the arena of wrestling, the wrestling arena. And I'm still trying to learn this verse. Mallanam mashanir nirnam nadavara Srinam smaro murtiman gopanam svajano shatam kshitibujam shasta svapitro shishu mrityor bojapate virada vidushang tatvang param yoginam vrishninam paradevate tivirito rangangata sagraja. So the picture of the scene is that everyone is seeing Krishna and Balaram as they enter the arena. They're all seeing the same lords. They're all seeing Krishna and Balaram, but they're all seeing him differently. The wrestlers are seeing Krishna as lightning, as a lightning bolt. The men of Mathura are seeing Krishna as the best of males, Naravara. The cowherd men are seeing Svajana, their own, one of us. He's one of us. The impious rulers, the Asatam Kshitibhujam, are seeing the Lord as Shasta, as a chastiser. His own parents, Svapitra, Pitroho, are seeing the Lord as their child, Shishu. Kamsa is seeing the Lord as death, yes. The unintelligent, the avidusha, are seeing the Lord as the virat, as the universal form. The yogis are seeing the Lord as param tattva, as the supreme truth. And finally, the vrishnis are seeing him as Paradevata, as the Supreme Lord. So everyone is seeing the same person, but they're seeing him differently. And how are they seeing him? They're seeing him in relation to their own identities. They identify themselves with particular groups. The wrestlers see themselves as wrestlers, one of the class of beings called wrestlers, and so on. And so as a member of that category, they are seeing the Lord in these different categories, they're seeing him in different ways. And of course, some of them are very joyful to see the Lord, and some of them are shaking in fear. The same Lord. And so many different perceptions of him are there. And this verse in today's chapter is saying very much the same thing in a slightly different way, but adding the point that everyone obtains the mercy of the Lord. Everyone in their particular relation to the Lord, in their particular way of approaching the Lord, including, and this is so important for the Bhagavatam, including Shishupala and other envious kings. Shishupala, Shishu means child, right? Pala means protector. I can't help but think this could be translated as babysitter. Anyway, this is an important theme of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is an inclusive literature that is teaching us to become followers of the Bhagavatas, and thus ourselves to become Bhagavatas, and thus to be very inclusive. And of course, this is the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to include everyone in the Sankirtan mission. Well, and so the questioning continues now with Yudhishthir, and this is of course all part of Narada's reply, which is part of Shukadeva Goswami's reply to Maharaj Parikshit. And what did Maharaj Parikshit ask in the very beginning of this chapter? We can go back and read this. My dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial, like a common man, for the sake of Indra, and thus kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical to others? So this is the question that is the thread through this whole pastime of the appearance of Lord Nrsimhadeva. And one could say that at the end of this account of the appearance of Lord Nrsimhadeva, that the question doesn't really seem to be answered. Because it seems that what Maharaj Parikshit is worried about could continue to be worried about, that the Lord is favoring his devotee. What do you think? Well, I want to suggest one possible answer, and this is that, as we all know, Prahlad Maharaj, the great devotee about whom Nrsimhadeva is so angry, what is his qualification? One of his qualifications is that he is equal to everyone. He does not see friends and enemies. He just doesn't see it. Just doesn't compute for him. And because this is his vision and this is his attitude, the Lord is very, very anxious to protect him. So I think this is a lesson for us, that we aspire to be followers of Prahlad Maharaj if we want the protection of the Lord in this particular qualification of Prahlad, that he is equal to everyone. Now, what does that mean, being equal to everyone? Okay, that can be discussed. But let's move on to the issue at hand, which I'm trying to avoid, which is that we have Shishupala. First of all, the background, of course, is being set up, that Yudhishthira is so much wondering about. How is it possible? Yudhishthira is really shocked. And let's remember, the situation is that it's the Rajasuya sacrifice of Yudhishthira. And at some point in the process, there is a certain ritual, and that is the offering of Argya to a selected person who is identified as the senior most, the person deserving of honor the most. And so it's decided, well, certainly this would be Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Shishupal doesn't see it that way. He says, wait, there's so many others here who are so much senior. And in certain ways, we can say they were senior. They were senior in age. They were senior in so many ways, being revered as great sages and so on. But of course, the situation was really just a trigger for Shishupala to express his envy. And when the time comes that Shishupala has made enough insults, he has made 100 insults. This was the benediction that Krishna has given to reassure Shishupala's mother, I will not kill him. So long he insults me 100 times. 100 times! I will not do any reaction. I will not respond. I will not harm him. Even he insults me 100 times. So the mother is saying, oh, okay, then there's no problem. But of course, he does insult 100 times, or is it 101? Krishna was keeping count. Click, click, click. I don't know. Somehow count was being kept. And so the time came, okay, Shishupala, we've all heard what you have to say. Now it's time to do a little operation on you. And so off with his head. And then, this is what surprises Yudhishthira so much. This is what amazes him, that in the presence, in the view of everyone, Shishupala, the Atman, which is Shishupala, enters into the body of Krishna. What? How is that possible? That's what Yudhishthira is concerned about. So much so that in the verse which we read, we have the word ashradheya iva. Ashradha, shradha, of course, means, it's usually translated as faith. Ashradha, no faith. Ashradheya, this is the gerundive form, and Prabhupada translates it as incredible. And if you think about the English word incredible, not credible, not believable, but it's ashradheya iva, it's practically unbelievable. I want to believe it because, after all, you are Narada Muni and you're telling me this. These things, or rather, sorry, Yudhishthira is speaking and he's seeing this. He's saying, you know, this is really hard to believe. Hard to believe. But he's asking, because he wants to understand. He is open now for understanding. And it's not that he is closing. Sometimes we may have a tendency to ask a question in a rhetorical way because we want a certain answer. But Yudhishthira is not like that. He really wants to understand. What kind of great curse could affect even liberated Vishnu Bhaktas? And what sort of person could curse even the Lord's associates? For unflinching devotees of the Lord to fall again to this material world? Come on, it's impossible. I cannot believe this. That's Prabhupada's translation of Ashradheya Iva. I can't believe this. It's not saying he doesn't want to believe, but he's saying right now I can't. I can't believe it. Well, this gets into that very sticky question, doesn't it? And now all of the senior devotees are just sort of smiling, amused themselves. How is this guy going to, how is he going to develop this point? Right? Well, essentially what I want to say is that we have two apparently opposing positions. And it seems to me that when we have two theologically opposing positions, the first thing we need to do is hesitate to see them as opposite. As opposite as they might be, as opposite as the idea that no one ever falls from Vaikuntha, and the idea that some do fall from Vaikuntha, namely all of us. It seems like a logical contradiction. And we all know that Aristotle, the great Greek philosopher, has told us that logical contradictions cannot be tolerated. But we are not doing Greek philosophy. We are doing Vaishnava philosophy and theology, and lo and behold, what we find again and again and again are all sorts of contradictions or apparent contradictions. Okay, that's one point. Another point I want to make is that in the history of philosophy and the history of theology, we find that certain controversies will arise at certain times in history, and then they will fade away. And they just don't, they aren't really a controversy anymore. An example from the wider Vaishnava tradition might be taken from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, the so-called monkey-cat controversy. As I was told by a very senior, now the late scholar of Sri Vaishnavism, himself a practicing Sri Vaishnava, he said, this controversy doesn't, it's not really so hot. You know, there may be some discussion of it, but everyone seems to have settled down about it that, with the understanding it's not really either this or that. There is some combination of both. One sees in history of Christian theology, there was a huge controversy in previous centuries over the notion, don't mind, I give a little Christian theology here, a little bit of comparative, you know, theology. I was recently at an interfaith dialogue, which took place at ISKCON Tirupati, very wonderful event, between four different groups. There were Roman Catholic Christians, there were Protestant Christians, there were Sri Vaishnavas, and there were Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And it was a wonderful event where there was a wonderful atmosphere, very positive mood among all the participants. So in Christian theology, there was a big discussion, maybe from the 16th, 17th centuries, about what is actually going on in this ritual called the Eucharist, in which the statement of Jesus in the Bible that this bread and this wine are my body and my blood. What does that mean? So that there have been libraries of books written on that subject of what that means, and they come up with interesting terminology. Transubstantiation. Not transformation. Transforming, that just means something that you see changes in a way that looks different. But the bread and the wine, they don't look any different. But they're changed. How have they changed? And so on and so forth. My point is that this subject is kind of passé now. They don't really talk about it so much. So when I hear this what became a controversy, to my knowledge, pretty much after Srila Prabhupada left, I can't help but wonder. I wonder when this is going to fade away and we're going to understand that indeed there's some truth. There is not some, there is full truth in both understandings. They go together. How to understand this? Maybe we need to have a deeper understanding of Krishna consciousness. Maybe we need to go deeper into what is something of a mystery. There was a French philosopher and playwright named Gabriel Marcel, 20th century. He used to make a distinction between puzzles and problems and mysteries. And he said, puzzles and problems you can solve. Sometimes you may need help from somebody else, but you can solve them. And mystery, in the deeper sense, is not something you solve. It's something that the more you go into the more you go into it, the deeper it gets. So there's something very mysterious about this this idea that actually we are all eternally related with the Lord, and we are somehow in a condition that we call separated from the Lord. And one thing I would point out in this discussion is we're using language. We use words like in and out and fallen and not fallen. These terms are associated, they are spatial terms. And indeed, in the description of the four Kumaras, when they are entering into Vaikuntha, they are going through so many gates, and then they come to the seventh gate. So we have a very strong sense of inside and outside. But in another sense, we get description of Vaikuntha as being the spiritual sky with so many planets. That's another picture, another understanding we get of Vaikuntha. When we hear about fallen, not fallen, sometimes it's been argued because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Ayi nanda tanu jakinkaran patitam mam vishame bhavan buddha. Patitam means fallen. It's not a very difficult word to translate. It's a passive participle of put, to fall. And so some argue, or it has been argued, even, I believe, by some acharyas, that at least, maybe not acharyas, in Sanskrit grammar, Panini, this does not have to mean sometime in the past one was not fallen. Okay, maybe. But still, we have this sense of the word fallen as being a different state from being not fallen. Whatever it is, in the past or in the future or now or whatever, but we do have a sense of being in the wrong place. Have you ever felt like you're in the wrong place? Maybe not here in Mayapur. Maybe we're here in the right place. But maybe if you're in, Tucson, Arizona, or Novosibirsk, we might sometimes have this sense, I don't feel I'm in the right place. Well, and then we have the Bhagavatam as one way of dealing with, or as discussing this mystery, and that is through narrative. Much philosophy and theology can't really get to where we want it to be through analytical language, by propositional language. It is like this. And therefore, so much of the Bhagavatam is narrative, because something is in narrative which you don't find in propositional language. And we can be reminded, not only is the Bhagavatam narrative, it is also poetry. And poetry means taking language and making it as rich as it can possibly be to communicate something which is otherwise not communicable. All right, so in Prabhupada's purport, he quotes a verse very famous, which he often quotes, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Evam yo veti tatvata chaktva deham punar janmanaiti mameti sorjana. So here we get Krishna's promise, Krishna's assurance. But note how Prabhupada translates it. It's the verse above. In any case, he uses the word back home, yes, in the previous. Yes, mamupetu kontea punarjanmaname. One who is purified of material contamination and returns home, back to Godhead, does not return to this material world. So that's there in the Bhagavad Gita. That, it seems to me, is all we really have to worry about. If having, by the grace of the Lord, and that we understand is available for anyone having any sort of approach to the Lord, from the verse 31, all of these listed have obtained the mercy of the Lord. All we have to worry about is, can we obtain the mercy of the Lord to go back home, or go home, whatever it is, to get there and stay there, and not be so foolish as to miss the bus when the bus comes to take us, or the train, or the whatever it is to take us back home to God, not to miss it. It seems to me this is the underlying message and also opportunity that the Bhagavatam is giving. Grantarashimad Bhagavatam ki? Questions, comments? Yes, Vaisheshika Prabhu.
Thank you very much. Beautiful class. This may be redundant, but I was wondering if you'd comment. There's a sentence in Prabhupada's purport related to this idea about falling or not falling in 1320, in which he says that it really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material nature.
Right.
And I was wondering if you'd comment about why it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh. Well, if you think about it, you can turn the same question around. Why should it matter? Once we're here, you know, the Buddhist example is the arrow that's gone in the arm, and then the Buddha tells his disciple, what does it matter where it comes from? Get that arrow out of yourself. So I think we can turn the question around. Why would it matter where the arrow comes? Okay, you could say, well, in that case, it could matter a lot because you want to know where the arrow's coming from because you don't want to get another arrow in your side. So you might take shelter, et cetera, et cetera. But that's an example, an analogy. Analogies always have limitations. But the essential point is there. So I think this turning around of that question really raises also the question, it's the same question for the broader issue, fallen, not fallen, and so on. What does it matter? Why? What would be the consequence? What would be the consequence if we one day decided it's like this, it's not like that? Or it's like this, it's not like that? What would be the practical implication of that for our devotional lives? All right.
Prabhupada gives the example of the disease, very simple example. When you get infected by a deadly disease or even not deadly disease, what does it matter? Or how even can you find out when was the point where I contracted that disease? It doesn't matter. You have to get cured, that's all.
Yeah. But someone could counter that, well, we need to know the cause of the disease because we need to, if we're being holistic doctors, then we need to know what is the cause, because we need to know how to really cure, not just to make a temporary cure. Someone might answer that way. Yes, Maharaj.
There's just a little spatial, as you've put it, consideration.
Okay.
In this, the verse itself, or the way it's translated, and some of the wording in the purport, is that in the verse it's translated, unflinching devotees, which means we assume Jai and Vijay, to fall again, as opposed to just to fall.
Right.
And then Prabhupada quotes 8:16 as, no, sorry. Yeah, 8:16. Which is about returning to the material world. And then Prabhupada quotes 4:9, and it's worded, as you pointed out, I think, take birth again. And then right at in the last couple of sentences, Maharaj Yudhisthira therefore was surprised that a pure devotee could return. It would, on the surface, tend to imply or could be construed that maybe Jai and Vijay had been here before.
Oh. the plot thickens.
Yeah. I mean, on the surface,
yeah,
that's actually what it sounds like,
yeah,
but it may not be. And frankly, I've never heard it discussed in those terms. Mm. I just thought I'd throw it into the ether as an interesting consideration.
Thank you. You're right that the word again in the translation we don't find in the verse itself, and that's one of those things where one wants to look at the commentaries, Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, to see did they make an explicit point in this regard, or is this Prabhupada's purport, which he's including in his translation, something which he does very often. And however, we do find, of course, the word punah in the verse from the Gita 4.9, punah janma. So then it becomes a bit of guessing beyond that, beyond that point. But it is interesting, considering the pastimes of the Lord are eternal, considering that the time span being given account of in the Bhagavatam, as far as I've been able to tell from cantos 4 through 9, is essentially telling of one day in the life of Brahma. So that's just one Brahma, one day, you know. So how many times Jai and Vijay maybe have to get this lesson again? Oh no, not again. We're getting cursed again. Didn't we go through this last time? Yes. Yes, Satyadev from...
Hare Krishna, thank you so much, Maharaj. What resonated with me is the first sentence in the verse of Maharaj Yudhisthira saying, I can't believe this.
Yeah, and that's the last sentence, but yes. Yeah.
That is the last sentence. Thank you. And I relate to that, and I think almost every devotee can relate to that.
Yeah, yeah.
That I can't believe I'm here in this material world. My constitutional position is to love Krishna.
Huh.
How did I give that up? Or how did I end up? I can't believe it. That's how I am feeling in hearing your class and hearing this verse. And I have to use my free will this time around the right way.
Thank you. This is, I think here you're using somewhat the very English... English-American expression of astonishment mixed with anger at oneself. Yes. You know, you walk the same path every day, and every day you stub your toe on the same brick, and then today you do it again, and you say, I can't believe it. I've done it again. I've done this 10 times. I can't believe it. Right.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
Yes, man.
We heard while we were reading how everyone sees the Lord.
Microphone is coming.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much for your class. And we were hearing how everyone sees the Lord from these different perspectives and in different ways. And nowadays we hear that, well, it's a long saying that all paths take to Rome or all paths take to God. So my question is that are there more than one path to reach a goal where one is not going to have to come back to this material world where one experiences so much suffering, and what is best of those paths, if there is more than one?
Krishna says in the Gita, mama vartma anuvartante. Manushya Partha Sarvasha. He says, Manushya Sarvasha, all human beings are on his path, Vartma. We talked about this a couple of days ago. I think it's an interesting reflection that the word Vartma means path, and we usually think of a path going more or less in a linear direction. But another way of thinking it, which may actually be closer to the original Sanskrit, is to think as an orbit around the Lord. And I mentioned that in Radhanath Swami's new book, not yet out, The Inner Journey, he uses this analogy, that we are all related to the Lord, much as planets are revolving around the sun. And as Mataji Nila Madhava pointed out, Vartma comes from the verbal root vrit, which means to turn. So it's right in the Sanskrit. But Krishna is saying Manushya Sarvasha, all human beings, suggesting there really is only one path, but it's a very broad path. It's an inclusive path. And within that inclusive path, there may be variations on how one takes Krishna's path. And I think that's what the Bhagavatam is trying to suggest. There are many, many paths. Many ways within the path of Krishna to come closer to the Lord. That's a big subject. I think, yes. You had a question, Maharaj. Here.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for your class. I have one comment and a question. I was thinking in the Ishopanishad and the chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita, there are many Upanishadic sections, and how those verses seem to be contradictory, but actually they are paradoxical. Yeah. And a paradox means it points to a higher reality that we cannot see.
Yes.
So what you were pointing out, whether we fall or we don't fall, it's not a contradiction, it's a paradox, and it's actually pointing to something, a higher reality, which we cannot perceive at our state.
Yes, good, thank you.
My question was regarding Jaya and Vijaya. We know that the pastimes of the Lord are eternal, but I do remember reading somewhere, and please correct me, that these pastimes are going on eternally, but it's not that Jaya and Vijaya come every time as right. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu and,
right.
and so on and so forth. So they only come once?
Little variations maybe there. It could be just once that they come, but I see Kinshana Balaram wants to urgently comment on this.
Srila Baladeva Vibhushan, his commentary on Lagu Bhagavatamrita Rupa Goswami, he's asking the same question in Madhya. He said, do they come again? And he says, no, it would be improper for the associates of the Lord to come every time again. So in next Kalpa, they're just ordinary demons who come as Shishupal and Dantavakra, Hiranyakashipu,
ordinary demons.
So it's a Srila Baladeva Vibhushan's commentary.
Thank you. We got a definitive answer. Yes, I think this may have to be the last.
We've been hearing, like, from verse 31 on, that people can approach Krishna through envy and anger and all these different ways, and devotional service as well. And I know we're all feel fortunate that we're devotees and trying to approach Krishna through devotional service, but it doesn't seem like Narada Muni is has been making a distinction, saying, you know, that it's better to be a devotee and not to be a demon who's always thinking of Krishna in enmity. And is there some explanation of why it's better to be a devotee?
That's explained by, I believe it's Rupa Goswami. It's better to do favorable devotion service than unfavorable. Why is it? I mean, you can sort of go on with the why question infinitely. It's like small children with their parents. Parents all know this. The child asks, why is it like this, Daddy? And you give an answer, and, but why? And you give an answer, yeah, but why? And you just keep going. So you could theoretically keep going ad infinitum. Why is it better? And the sort of bottom line we understand is that it's better to please Krishna, isn't it? I mean, if you think about it, just in the real world, not that that's not the real world, that's the real, real world, but in the real world, it's so much easier to get through life when you're pleasing to others in your relationships than if you're just a troublemaker. You might have a very strong relationship with someone of adversity, that's just, giving you heart attacks. Wouldn't it be nicer to have a warm, friendly, pleasing relationship? So I think it's a sort of common sense point. On that note, shall we end? Thank you all so much for your kind attention and participation. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Prem Anande.